You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Guidepost. I think this might be the last one, the last new one before Christmas. So Merry Christmas, everyone. We've got a lot of positive feedback from our first installment of Back to School with Dr. Ben on the economy of fish. We hope everyone's getting a little bit out of that, and we look forward to launching the next episode here probably before Christmas, right, Cody?
Yeah, it goes live on Monday. Monday will be chapter two.
Okay, so be on the lookout, y'all, for chapter two. You driving to grandma's house for Christmas, nothing better than listening to me and Dr. Ben talk about some really dense fish econ stuff. I'm sure the rest of the family will be thrilled in the family truckster. But hey, you know what? You're driving. Rules of the road are whoever's driving's got control of the radio. A little suffering on Christmas never hurt anybody. You got to pay for all the presents. You should be able to listen to what you want as far as podcasts, right, Cody?
Got my support. One second, man, of Tony babbling on a podcast is definitely equal to maybe two seconds of an in-law babbling after a couple glasses of wine on whatever Wednesday or Thursday. So on Wednesday.
Oh, sure. Better than giving your kids a pile of sugar and letting them loose in grandma and grandpa's house. Make them listen to me and Dr. Ben for an hour. They'll be primed and ready. So today we're going to talk about the striped bass meeting, and we didn't do a rapid reaction because normally when we're in that mood after a rapid reaction, we flush it down the toilet because we're just cursing and screaming. So rather than give our crack podcast editing team an opportunity to say, hey, that was terrible, do that again, we decided just to kind of measure twice and cut once. And there's a lot to talk about with stripers. I'm sure the general consensus is somewhere between disappointment and disillusionment. And we're going to dig in, try our best to explain what happened, the crazy stuff that was said. And, you know, we got to go through a lot. So just kind of buckle up with us. You know, Cody, what do you think the most efficient way to break this down and move forward if we were?
There's probably two lanes here. There's like from a little bit more formal of a just what happened. You know, the basics of what happened is a little bit cleaner. You know, this, and this is how we ended the final vote. So maybe we start there just so people have the building blocks. But the second part of it, the other path, is what was said around those actions. And I guess that's where the nuance lies. That's where the data lies. That's where our fear for going forward and how these conversations played out lies. So maybe we just start real quick with just clean and simple, you know, voting actions, and at a very high level without deep diving too much into the politics, like how we got to those actions. So it's probably the worth 5 minutes to start.
Yeah. Let's just read the motions. How about that?
Yeah. So to explain to people, it's kind of a weird setup. I'm no master of Robert's rules. I've been around them for a little bit, but it was kind of weird that the meeting was set up as, okay, we have two motions. One is going to be the baseline motion. One is going to be a substitute for them. And we're going to spend a long time perfecting both of them before we vote on them, which is very strange to me. Maybe there's a master of Robert's rules who listens to this podcast. If so, I don't know how you become a master of Robert's Rules. That kind of sucks for you. But even outside of that, you know, I'd love to hear if someone has more context on this, but spent time perfecting how they wanted to build these two motions before they voted on them. And so we'll read them in a second, but the baseline one came from New Jersey. The substitution came from Massachusetts. The substitution reflected what we would have liked to see in the fishery. And basically a big chunk of the meeting was just ripping apart people going back and forth, kind of ripping apart these two motions and trying to manipulate them to best reflect what they want. And how it played out was towards the end, by the time it was time to vote, Massachusetts substitution had kind of been Swiss cheesed so much that it no longer looked how it originally did. And it ended up falling flat. So Tony, if you have it in front of you, why don't you read New Jersey to start, and then quickly Massachusetts after.
Move to initiate an addendum to support striped bass rebuilding by 2029 in consideration of the 2024 recreational commercial mortality while balancing socioeconomic impacts. Options should include, if needed, a range of overall reductions, consideration of rec versus comm contributions to the reductions, rec season, and size changes, taking into account regional variability and availability, and no harvest first, no target closures. Final action shall be taken in summer of 2025 meeting to be in place for the 2026 rec and comm fishery. And this is the original substitute motion before it was put through the Cuisinart machine that is the Atlantic Striped Bass Management Board. Move to substitute. So when I read this, folks, understand that this is prepared well ahead of time. Understand this. This was a pretty fair motion, and it took a lot. It was very detailed, and it took a great deal of account into every region and what those regions wanted. So let me read it, and we can talk about it a little more. Move to substitute to take board action to implement the 2025 recreational season closures to achieve a 9% reduction and decrease the commercial quotas by 9%. The recreational season closures will be implemented regionally as follows. Maine to Rhode Island, no harvest closures for 22 days in wave 3, plus the number of days needed in wave 5 to achieve a combined 9% reduction across both waves to be implemented in uniform dates across the region. Connecticut to North Carolina, no harvest closures in the same number of days in wave 2 and wave 6 needed to achieve combined 9% reduction across both waves to be implemented in uniform dates across the region. Chesapeake Bay, Maryland, no targeting closure of 22 days in wave 4 to lengthen existing closure. 9% reduction is calculated with striped bass only trips eliminated assumption. Virginia, no harvest closure of 18 days at the end of wave 6. New York, Pennsylvania, Delaware area specific fisheries, seasonal closures to achieve 9% reductions. The region state will submit implementation plans for the board for board approval at the winter 2025 meeting next week, meeting week rather. If a region can't decide on uniform dates, the board will make the selection. The implementation deadline is April 1, 2025. So that's a really well thought out motion. And then that opened the floor for discussion. So, you know, what y'all have to understand going into this is this, how do I put this? This whole striped bass thing that the TC worked up was just, I mean, there was a million ways to lose, right? A million ways to lose and not many ways to win. Okay. If you recall, there was, I think it was like line two, in the bullet two in the report that was like, well, if we stay at F-2024, we don't even need to do this. And then there was another bullet that said, oh, MRIP's terrible. If it's less than a 10% reduction, we don't even know if we're capable of doing it. So when you're us and you're reading a document like that, you're like, well, we're kind of set up to lose here, because our motivation was clear from the get-go, and it was save the 2018 year class. We know that when the 2015s entered the slot, that harvest went up by a million fish. And the 18s aren't as robust, but harvest is going to go up. And the projection was by 17%. So it's just very shocking to us. I don't know any other species on the planet that if you had 6 years of not bad recruitment, failed recruitment, complete failures, you had 6 years of that, and then you knew that the last good year class you had was moving through the slot, just to move that slot, and we don't have really a choice to move it up because we don't have a lot of big fish, and the 15s get hit again, you just slide it down. And we don't have time on the podcast to talk about if there's no fish, you can't catch them. And I think if y'all follow us, you know that the premise we really fought against, the premise, the baseline that they used to calculate the reductions and moving the slot down. They used a baseline that had a lot more little fish in the system than we do right now. So it was kind of comparing apples to oranges. And, you know, that's the risky run when you get into fisheries management and modeling and statistics. If you pick a certain baseline, or man, stuff can turn out a lot different than how you think it should turn out. And we're always a science-based group, but there was a little bit of country logic in our position. And no one can explain, there are no little fish. I don't know how else to say it. It's going to get bad. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And somebody will hopefully listen to this podcast 2-3 years from now and be like, holy moly, he was right. Man, this sucks. And let me tell you, I don't want to be right. So we got the motion sitting in front of us, and basically, you know, we lost our position of moving the slot down. And I'll tell you, we moved heaven and earth. We sat there and pulled every MRIC query we could. We talked to every scientist that would talk to us. And there's just so much inertia on the board. You look at that document, there's six ways to get out of doing anything. So I guess the managers just felt, the good managers who actually care about conservation wanted to do something. So, you know, let's applaud them for that. It wasn't exactly what we wanted them to do, but rather than look, this is what it comes down to. I don't think that a 22-day closure, harvest closure, is going to save striped bass. I do think protecting the 2018 year class will go a long way. And let me explain why. So we hear over and over again that there's no stock recruitment relationship. And if you go to the ASMFC website, asmfc.org, and you just go to the species and click on striped bass, that big chart that you'll see about halfway down the page shows you the recruitment and the spawning stock biomass. And if you look at the 5 years that are really the peak, man, a lot of those years were when, you know, in 1988, we had a spawning stock biomass of under 50 million pounds. Okay. And so that's 1988-ish. 1996, we quadrupled that. We had a spawning stock biomass over 200 million pounds. And guess what? We had three of the best year classes we've ever seen during that meteoric 4X rise. So my point here is, you know, you got a choice, right? You can sit there and say, oh man, there's this one year where we didn't have a lot of fish and we had this crazy spawn. Ergo, there's no stock recruitment relationship. Now, is that how we want to manage a multi-billion dollar fishery? Just to cross our fingers and be like, we need that again. That we got in the mid 90s, those perfect conditions on that perfect tide, on that perfect day, on that perfect little tiny, teeny tiny window where everything was perfect. Is that what you want? And that's where they get this no stock recruitment relationship.
Well, it's kind of like if your buddy came and said, dude, I didn't even study for that test and I got a 95. Isn't that crazy? And you'd be like, that is pretty crazy, dude. And then he goes, going forward, I'm not going to study for my tests. It's like, just because it happened once doesn't mean that it's necessarily the new strategy should not be keep the SSB so lean that we maximize how much we kill, because we just hope eventually that we'll get a good spawn from a super lean SSB.
And hey, look, there were years, you know, 2011 was this incredible year class. And 2012 was one of the worst ever recorded. So you do have that variability. And I'm not denying that there are environmental factors. But if you just take a step back and say, okay, what if we got the perfect spawning conditions, the perfect, you know, Goldilocks zone spawning conditions, and there were a lot of fish? What would happen then? I think that would be pretty good. And you can't look me in the eye and say, all things equal, perfect spawning conditions, it's going to be the same amount of little fish if we don't have very much SSB or if we have a lot. I don't believe you. I don't. That is some pretty basic stuff. Like, don't you want more fish? Even if you can make these claims, yes, striped bass can have a biblical spawn with not many of them. But wouldn't it be nicer if we had more of them so they had a really biblical spawn?
It also operates off the assumption that if the environmental factors do not lend towards a biblical spawn, that those fish that would be participating in said spawn, if they're not going to successfully spawn at a high rate, that they have no other value other than ending up on a plate, ending up on shore. And that is such a nearsighted assessment of the fishery. And also with, I don't know how deep we'll get into them, but maybe a teaser for everyone of more to come, that we're about to take a dive at that economics of stripers and the numbers. You heard socioeconomic in one of these motions. Get ready, because they are not in favor of anyone else other than our community. So,
oh yeah, we're not even going to talk about that yet. But we have, as soon as that motion passed, we had done those economic podcasts a little months while ago. Back, and we held on to them for the right, you know, the right time and place, like we do with some of our other podcasts. That's, I think a lot of people do that. And as soon as we saw that motion, the first motion pass, and it said, check out socioeconomic, it was kind of like, oh, okay. Thank you for doing this while our economics professor's grading the last of his finals and now has a little bit of time off for the holidays. We'll get right on that for you. So, that, again, we're not going to get into it right now, but it's probably one of the most heavily tilted things I've ever seen in my life. And we really look forward to sharing it with the community. But, you know, Cody, let's move on. So, you know, I want to talk about this because this is a nice little segue, you know. So we're looking at socioeconomic, which we don't really bring into the discussion, because we try to be fair and we know what it's going to look like. it's going to be a multi-billion dollar industry versus an industry that's worth about $14 or $15 million. There's no comparison. So, and we don't think that things should solely be managed on socioeconomic considerations, but since it's in the motion, y'all will see that soon. The other thing is this equity. We heard that a lot. And so we pulled the MRIP numbers, and we pulled the update to the stock assessment. So I'm going to read a little ditty from the update to the stock assessment. Okay. And this is verbatim, word for word. You go on the ASMFC website, scroll down to the documentation until you see a document that's the most recent update to the stock assessment. ASMFC stock assessment overview, Atlantic striped bass, put out in November 2024. So verbatim, this is where we're at. Total number of releases have declined to a low of 16.4 million in 2021 after a series of weak year classes. Live releases rebounded somewhat then, averaging 27.8 million fish released, leading to 2.5 million release mortalities in 2022 and 2023. From 2022 and 2023, about 40% of total removals were release mortalities, compared to 2018 to 2021, where release mortalities made up 50% of total removals. So release mortalities down 9%. Now, I also want to focus heavily on the fact that not a single person brought up the NOAA Fisheries Effort Survey, that they have admitted to overestimating some recreational effort by 40%. We know that they definitely overestimated striped bass effort. We don't know if it's 40%, and we have to wait till 2026 to get this. So my point is saying, if in 2022 and 2023, we're down to only 40% of total removals with release mortality, that means that it's actually way lower than that. Because if they're overestimating our effort, they're overestimating how many fish we are catching. So when you're talking about 9% of total releases are what add to the total mortality, and that number's down 10%, well, what does that tell you? We are catching a lot less fish. A lot. So let's look at this real quick, Cody. And now we're going to get into the catch and release guys have to do their share. They haven't taken a reduction. So let's take a gander. When we pulled these numbers, this was only, we only had numbers available through wave four. So we ran a query on MRIP that were for B2s. B2s are the fish that are live releases, okay? And we started in 2017, and to compare apples to apples, we set the parameter to only include up to wave four because, we wanted to compare apples to apples. What the data that we had for 2024 at that time was only up to wave four. So starting in 2017, released alive B2s, 25 million. 18 is 17 million. 19 is 15 million. 20 is 18 million. 21 is 18 million. 22 is 15.9 million. 23 is 12 million. 2024 is 9 million. 9 million fish released alive. So if I wanted to be like the technical committee and use a crazy baseline, I would pick 2017 because that was the highest releases of 25 million. And that would basically be 9.6 divided by 25.1. We're catching 38%. That's 38%. If you wanted to be a little fairer, so it was 25 million, 17 million, 15 million, 18 million, 18 million, 15 million, 12 million, 9 million. Let's say the average was 17 million in that little series before the wheels came off. That's, you know, you're looking at, pardon me if I calculate right now, that's 56%. So about a 50% reduction, or about a 62% reduction, depending on what year you're talking about. And those are B2s, Atlantic Ocean through Wave 4. So my message to the catch and release guys have to take a hit crowd is two things. One, you're either lying by not mentioning the FES overestimating us by up to 40%, or you don't check MRIP. You don't actually look at the numbers. You didn't read the line in the stock assessment that said we're down to 40%. And you're misrepresenting everything. Now, I would say this too. I'm not going to put my finger on the people who are saying that and not hold anyone else responsible. There are commissioners on this board that know this, that actually do pay attention. And for whatever reason, God help me to understand, they don't say anything and they don't challenge these people. So my question is, how much more do we have to give up? Because through wave four right now, we're at 9.6 million trips. And through wave four and other years, we were at 25, 17, 18 million. Is there any other sector that's taken that level of reduction? You got me. Cody, let's get into the document a little bit, because in the presentation, that it was a very good presentation that Emily gave at the beginning. It was public comment rec closures. And you can go, if y'all didn't record this and take all the screenshots like we did, this is on YouTube.
I think I know where you're going with this one. I think I remember this one off the top of my head. Are we talking about no targeting closures and the public comment support?
Yeah.
I believe if I round up slightly on both numbers, it's 3,000 to 50. Isn't it 29 something to 46?
Yeah, so it's
that's what we call a landslide.
2892 to 46.
Okay, 2900 to 50 if you want to round. Yeah. That is one, it's just a tick over a percent and not on its way to two. This was the core impetus of our fight during our call to action campaign. To take a quick step back for everyone who's disappointed at how this played out, the fact that what we're about to talk about, if y'all had not spoken up the way that you did, these would likely be enacted or at the top of the pyramid for what's to come for the next year when the addendum process plays out, which is not to say that we're not done fighting against it, but the numbers that y'all put up, 2,900 to 50, rounded. It is mind-blowing that they even ended up back on the table. And they ended up, that happening, that ended up being one of the kill shots for Nicola in Massachusetts' substitute motion, was the fact that no targeting got pulled back in.
Let's get this out of the way so people understand what happened. It's super, super simple. All right. Nicola's motion, who took Mike Armstrong's position at in Massachusetts, and Nicola's very smart person. She's a good leader. It was a good motion. I could tell just by looking at it how much time she spent on it. Their heart is in the right place, and they are trying to do the right thing. But what happened was this, okay? A while back, there was regions voted on a couple meetings ago. So the region was Maine to Rhode Island and then Connecticut to North Carolina. And this is for the Atlantic. So put yourself in the shoes of Connecticut and New York. And if this played out in the voting, right, they are much more similar to Maine to Massachusetts in the wants and needs of the fishery than they are from New Jersey south. So let's count the votes. Connecticut. So the region is Connecticut to North Carolina. Connecticut, New York, North Carolina. Those are the ones who actually give a rat's ass about conservation. Now you have, so that's three. Now you have New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia. You lose every time. And the clock is ticking on Virginia. So Youngkin has turned VMRC into not a fun place to be. And we know that. And there's crazy stuff going on. And we're not going to come down on VMRC because, you know, that's what happens sometimes when you have a state that has a direct channel to the fisheries agency and gives them marching orders when every administration changes. Virginia is not in a good place. This is not, and it's not a Republican Democrat thing. It's just, are you going to let your state agencies do their job? Or are you going to tell them how to do their job? And you're always in a better place. Fish conservation minded fishermen are always in a better place if the state agency has the flexibility to do their job instead of being told by people who don't understand fisheries or have an agenda that this is the job that you need to do. So anyway, Connecticut and New York lose. And I mean, North Carolina, they don't even have a fishery anymore, but North Carolina would lose as well. It's going to be three boats to four. And these regions, you know, in the Atlantic, they all pretty much have to do the same thing. So one region can't say no target. Oh, I want no harvest. I want to change the slot size. That's very reflective of conservation equivalency. And we were looking for some consistency. So as soon as the amendment was made, Maryland made an amendment to Nicola's motion to include no harvest closures in the Chesapeake in Maryland, rather than the no target closures that Nicola had put in there. Nicola put that in Maryland, so this motion would pass. And the second that that pin on that grenade was pulled and rolled in the room, Adam Nowalski from New Jersey hopped in and said, well, I want no targeting closures on there too. And that is the moment that the vote changed, because Connecticut and New York did not want that. It flipped the deck on them. And their only option was to vote this motion down and go back to the original motion, which would start an addendum. But here's the thing. The addendum is the ultimate win for the people who don't want to change anything, because the 2018s are going to get clobbered next year. And what happens is this, as we go through the addendum process, they can stall and delay and do whatever they want. This addendum probably not going to be done till October for changes in 2026. And that's if things go their way. If things don't go their way, they're going to slow this shit down to molasses rolling uphill in January. And then it's not going to get done. And you know what they're going to say? They're going to say, well, we need to wait for the benchmark stock assessment that's going to come out in October, November of 2027. And then here's a little playbook, and y'all save this podcast. When that stock assessment comes out, you know what they're going to say? We got to lower the reference points. That's what they're going to say. You can't meet the water quality standards, lower the water quality standards. That's what they're going to say. I'm telling you right now, mark it, book it, put it down. We need hatcheries and we need to lower the reference points. And that's their playbook. So that is something we are totally opposed to because it doesn't solve the problem long term. All it says is there's less fish. And then these chuckleheads are still going to be on the board pushing things to the limit. And we're still screwed. And here's the real big picture, right? And look, just take a super step back. Here's the super big picture. Super big picture is, even if we meet our goal and hit target by 2029, the wheels come off in 2023 or 2033, my bad, 2033, because that's when all these bad year classes will be pretty much fully recruited, almost fully recruited into the SSB. And here's the other thing I want y'all to understand. The SSB is based on weight, not numbers of fish. So there's kind of like a false flag, like an artificial sense of hope. Because guess what? Every year, fish get bigger. So it looks like there's more fish in the SSB, but the reality is they're just getting bigger and they weigh more. So that's a whole other ball of wax that, you know, when you look at it, all along, we've been looking at this and being like, yes, honorable goal, get the SSB to target by 2029. That's your marching orders from day one. That's how the rules say you got to manage striped bass. Noble effort. But what are you going to do in 2033?
That reminds me when I brought up some questions on that TC webinar call. And one of the responses was focused on 2029. And it does raise a really interesting question, which is like that 29 goal. Is the board solely held to operate to achieve that goal? Or are they not enabled and empowered to have any sort of foresight and see what is to come and recognize?
Let me answer your question, right? The projections, we won't see that until the 2027 benchmark comes out.
Right.
But when they were making these projections after 10 years, it's damn near impossible to make a projection on the stock. But unless they find those magic smaller fish that would have increased harvest by moving the slot down, Cody, I think we all know what's going to happen in 2033, right? This, like, we just keep having bad spawns. So let's, you know, we were able to listen to some of the commissioners and really get a feel for a couple things. So the easiest one to describe is this. We pushed real hard that the commercial reduction should come off harvest, not quota. And we had a couple of folks, Jim Gilmore from New York, and we'll pop the quote in here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just following along, Dennis's comment goes back a few years. So in New York, the last 2 years, we harvested our full commercial quota last year. And again, right now we're at 99% of our quota. So any reduction to the commercial fishery, you know, is going to have an impact. That 1% I'm not particularly thrilled with. I don't think that maybe is meaningful, but there will be a reduction if we come up with a percentage. Thank you.
Now, Jim just pointed out, and so did John Clark from Delaware, that they're catching their quota. Their New York was at 99% of quota. So here's my question. Then what difference does it make? Then why don't you just do it off a harvest anyway? Because some states aren't catching their harvest. States that catch a lot of fish. So if you are one of the states that is catching your entire quota, what difference does it make if you take the reductions off of harvest? it will be the same if you were catching 100% of your quota. But there are states that are not catching 100% of their quota. Why should they not have to take a reduction? Taking it off a harvest is a catch-all. You worry about equity? That's equity. That's equity. The states that are catching their quota take the same percentage of the states that aren't. If you take it off a harvest, what is not equitable about? Don't you understand? Like, I don't know. How do you not get that? How do you not get it? Because you're going to let a couple states get away with murder.
Well, there's two things here. You either can't do basic math and realize that taking a number off of 100% or 100% is still going to be the same number, which is concerning. Or the second option is you're doing it in defense of others, right? Like there's strategy there happening, and that you realize that the decision doesn't affect you at all, but you're going to voice in support of others.
So that gets us right into one of the motions to amend. And this was from Jeff Kaline of New Jersey, Lunds Fisheries. They have, you know, Jeff, I think, manages the Persane Menhaden boats off of New Jersey. I may be wrong about that. I'm pretty sure that's part of his job at Lunds. But the motion to amend Nicola's motion was commercial quotas reduced by 1%. So let's get into, here we go. We're getting into voodoo math again. And they keep saying the same thing, but it doesn't work, right? So what they're basing this on is they're saying commercial harvest is 10%, which it is not because of the FES. But I don't know. Keep saying that bullshit. I guess a certain amount of people believe you, but if they're overestimating recreational effort by about 40%, commercial ain't 10%. Any scientist who disagrees with me on this, formal invite, hop on the podcast with me. So Jeff Kaline says, let's reduce quotas by 1%. And there was a great quote by John Clark.
John Clark?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. First, just to Dennis's comment, we do catch our quota, and 9% or 1% would be a reduction to what our fishermen catch. But 1% is better than 9%. But once again, I think that if this is the route we go, I would prefer to see this. But I think, as has been stated many times, commercial fisher, we know how much they're catching. Based on what we've heard today, 9%, especially with what we're going to be doing recreationally, we don't know what kind of impact it'll have. But 9%, we know that takes 9% out of the revenue of our fishermen. We've been cutting them. And I just don't think it's fair to take the same amount out of both fisheries.
Basically, John said that taking revenue from our fishermen isn't fair, to take the same amount from both fisheries. So you got, I don't know, 6 to 10 gill netters in Delaware. John Clark's from Delaware. You got 6 to 10 gill netters that are using anchored mono gill nets 6 months before they passed addendum 1 to amendment 7, which was commercial quota transfer stuff, so they could kill more fish that were coming into spawn. About 6 months before that, Delaware vastly expanded the allowable range of gill nets, anchored gill nets, and they moved them up into what I would call a choke point in Delaware Bay. So my question is this: what commercial fishery is going to, let's say, 2x the allowable area that they're allowed to set anchored gill nets to intercept females coming into spawn, not leaving, coming into spawn? What commercial fishery is going to 2X the area if the population's in good shape? Tell me that. You don't do that unless the population is in horrific shape. So that speaks volumes. Now, my next question is, why do those 6 to 10 people's jobs matter more than everyone else's jobs? Because he said something to the effect of the revenue from our fishermen, you don't think it's fair. Well, your fishermen don't represent 1%, vastly one less than 1% of the economy. So why is it so hard for John Clark to understand that? One, two, why does 6 to 10 people matter so much more than thousands of other people? Three, why does he have the right to pick the winner? In what crazy world does one individual who clearly is utterly biased towards the commercial fishery, why do they get to make the decision that can so vastly negatively impact thousands of people in Delaware? Why does that bias get to kill the tackle shops, tourism, license sales, everything? So there's a little park, Cape Henlopen State Park, and I have fished there more than once. And it's this great little state park. It's super clean. Everybody's nice there. And they got this big, long pier for people to drive up from everywhere and fish off of. And there's this little tackle shop that was on the pier. Now, tackle shop owner was super nice guy. Everybody liked him. Unfortunately, he got sick, passed away. Nobody picked up the lease for that tackle shop. Now, if there's one tackle shop on earth that should still exist, it's one in a state park on a pier at the mouth of Delaware Bay. You can see the ocean from the place. Has lights, lights up like a Christmas tree at night. People running in and out of there, getting bait, getting their licenses, getting stringers for their fish, whole community around. Nobody to pick the lease up because there's no goddamn fish to catch. So why didn't that guy and all the people that he employed, why didn't it dawn on John Clark that maybe if there were a few more stripers in the water in Delaware, that maybe that guy's business would stay open? Or maybe somebody would say, hey, that's a viable business. I'll pick the lease up. Now, I don't know if somebody picked the lease up last year or something, but I know the last time I checked, that lease wasn't picked up. And that should be a money-making machine. You sell bloodworms out of that place faster than they come in. So again, big question. Why is one person allowed to pick winners, consistently vote for six people, and not give one goddamn iota about all the other people who have families and have jobs and rely on this stuff and just not give a shit and just say, I pick you as the winner? That's a little messed up if you ask me. Don't know. Don't know how y'all feel about it. So, moving, when it was repeated over and over again, reflex removals of the commercial fishery. It does not. The FES overestimated us. Does not reflect removals because somebody takes 10%, which is a lie, of the fishery, the reduction percentage should be the same for everyone. And it should come off of what you're catching, not a pretend number. So I think I pretty much beat that one to death, Cody, right? I mean, okay. So I guess we're going to just do the big thing in the room now. So after several decades of listening to these meetings and sometimes feeling like nothing surprises me, I was surprised with this one. So let's go on ahead and play the comment on record at the meeting from Mike Wayne from the American Sport Fishing Association.
We're going to go to the room now. So I saw Mike Wayne with his hand up, and then I think there's maybe one more hand, and then we'll come back to the board.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Wayne with the American Sport Fishing Association. I oppose the substitute and support the main motion. I think the public process is really important for such a significant decision of season closures. And it seems like on the fly, the board has chopped up this motion to look a lot like the conservation equivalency process that I think everyone had opposed moving forward with, given the status of the resource. And so I think giving the addendum the opportunity to consider this more thoroughly, really develop options out that the public can consume and provide input on is the best path forward. You know, I think about, you guys know that I am part of a lot of these fishery management discussions, and this is probably the most unique fishery that ASMFC manages, especially recreationally. And I look at the public comments, and I know there's millions of striped bass anglers out there, millions. And I'm only seeing 2,800 comments from a lot of the same people that we know have been commenting. And so as an organization, we're going to work with our members to try to get more people integrated into this process. We know that the recreational fishery is very diverse, and I don't feel like the public comments really are a good reflection of that diversity. And so where's the opportunity to get those individuals into this process? Where's the opportunity to give folks the chance to get involved and engaged? I don't think it's on the fly with this substitute motion. And I challenge the board to go the addendum route and reach out to the constituents that they haven't heard from. Don't talk to the same folks that you've been talking to the same all the time. Find the people who care about this resource and value it in a way that their voices should be heard too. And that's what we'll do as an association ourselves. Thank you, Adam.
How do y'all feel about that?
We know that you have spent years trying to better understand this coastwide fishery and all of its nuances and multiple sectors and YOIs from different estuaries and SSB goals and all the legal requirements of all these different regulations and enforcements and how you feel about the fishery and how you want to see it in the future and everything that goes into management across over a dozen jurisdictions. But you've spent years trying to better understand that. But could you quiet down? Could we go find other people who haven't done that, who might agree with me? Because I'm sick of all these people who don't agree with me continually having a voice. I think we need to go find new people who don't agree with everyone else who's been participating. That's the ethos of what you just heard.
Well, no, it actually said that. That's actually,
it's horrifying.
Yeah. And I look at the public comments, and I know there's millions of striped bass anglers out there, millions. And I'm only seeing 2,500 comments from a lot of the same people that we know have been commenting. Hard stop right there. So, a couple things. One is that organization issued a form letter over voters' voice, which is different than a sign-on letter. That's put your email in, hit send. You don't even have to look at it. Ours, you have to read the letter, fill out the form, yada, yada, yada. And we go to great lengths, and it costs us a gazillion dollars in time to do it that way, because the forum stuff after the Menhaden thing many years ago, the forum stuff has been discounted by ASMFC. We've asked them questions about it. That's why we didn't buy similar software. So they released their form letter. I think it was like 48 hours before it started. So gave people hardly any time, right, to do that. We stayed up all night and released our stuff, got everything ready, website ready, position ready, everything within, I think, probably 18 hours of that final meeting where Emily had the presentation, the kind of the coastwide presentation on it. And we just, out of respect, you know, we had the document, but we wanted that meeting to be over with before we put our position out there to just say, hey, look, we work with the system. But we got 1,700 people, a couple hundred brands to review our letter and sign onto it in like 5 days. And two of those days were the weekend. So it's kind of hard for me to read that. We're hearing from the same people and yada, yada, yada. When, you know, I go back to when we were still telling people to send their own emails in and to CC us. And even if you didn't agree with us and you had a different position, you were in the mix to win the free pair of sunglasses or jacket or, you know, whatever we had. We just wanted people to comment. That's been our message since the get-go. Like, polite, well-educated comments, you know, rising tide raises all ships. Y'all know what conservation equivalency is because of us, because of our silly little conservation equivalency sucks sticker. And if you've been with us for long enough, you remember that battle. You probably know what acronyms like YOY and SSB and release mortality, you know, what is F? What is M? You know, y'all know that stuff because we've been preaching it, and you don't have to agree with us, but it, whatever your position is, it gives you a greater understanding to present an educated position. So
our goal has always been to empower people and to empower you to think, not tell you how to think. We had people that did not agree with our position on lowering sloth this time around, and those are people that have supported us in past campaigns. We had some brands, we had new brands join in, and brands and businesses and tackle shops that typically do not support us, who supported our stance this time, and a few others who, whether it was trying to understand the nuance on a short timeline or maybe they didn't support the slot drop that was a major part of our stance, did not sign on to this one. That's a big part of how we do things. We're going to talk about the topic. Does everyone agree with us? And if you agree with how we feel about this topic, then you're on board. Ride with us. We always lean into that nuance, make everyone try as best as possible to be free thinkers while also understanding the constraints of the process. So we went form sign-on letter here. We've leaned into that more recently just based off of the timelines. Like you said, in other calls to action, we've gone submit your own comments and CC us. We've done other ways to empower people.
Cody, we had five days.
There was no submit your own comment with significant scale, especially representing industry and brands. Brands don't have a policy representative on their team. They have a marketing department.
Well, hold on, Cody. You're getting into the last part of the quote here that I'm going to read. So this is the same quote that we just played. Don't talk to the same folks that you've been talking to all the time. Find the people who care about this resource and value it in a way that their voices should be heard too. And that's what we'll do as an association ourselves.
Why haven't you done it? Here's the gauntlet. You guys have existed for decades.
Yeah.
Why haven't you done it?
Yeah, you got like a 30, 40, 50 year. I don't know. I don't really pay attention to them too much, but you got a pretty good head start on us. So that's a pretty embarrassing thing.
So are you admitting that you suck at educating and empowering people, or are you admitting that they don't believe in you because you don't have a legitimate stance? Those are the two options. is the third option, that all these people are out there and just in decades you haven't figured out how to communicate with them, but you're telling the board, an advocacy group is telling the board that they should go out and do advocacy outreach to empower the people who would support their stance that they have not been able to yet empower and activate. Yikes.
That's pretty accurate.
Y-I-K-E-S. Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, and we're not, look, man, there's a lot of water under the bridge. And we have never come on here and said, this is the name of this association, and then, you know, blah, 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 and seem like we're attacking them. But this was beyond the pale. When that quote was said, my phone almost melted with text messages. I can't believe he said that. You know what, Cody, I'd be remiss not to bring this up. So we put a little funny SpongeBob SquarePants. And look, y'all, I'm not kidding. If you didn't see it on Instagram and you don't laugh at it, you don't got a great sense of humor. It was just a funny thing, like a 10-second clip of a SpongeBob SquarePants, which I'm too old. I was like an in-betweener for that. I was too old to watch it. My kids are too young. I don't know anything about SpongeBob SquarePants, but I saw this thing and I laughed so hard I almost cried. Well, got back to me that this same individual, the same association, was saying how this wasn't good to do things like this for management. You know, it was a lowbrow thing for us to do, and it doesn't help management. Well, glass houses and stones, my man, because you work behind the scenes to misrepresent our positions, and, you know, we don't even get into that. But how do you think this is for management? Don't talk to the same folks that you've been talking to all the time. Find the people who care about this resource and value it in a way that their voices should be heard too.
So do the other people not care about the resource?
I'm only seeing 2,500 comments from a lot of the same people that we know have been commenting.
What's wrong with that?
The SpongeBob SquarePants thing, if you can't laugh at that, I'm probably not going to go fishing with you or have a beer with you, because you're probably about as fun as I don't know what. But you go on record saying everyone who commented currently should be ignored, and you're going to somehow build an army. So you think that's better for management than a funny 10-second clip that got people laughing, and you just trash all the conservation and advocacy? So are you going to start doing it tomorrow, or the day after tomorrow, or the day after that? Because and where were you for the last 5, 6, where were you all that time? Because I don't know. So
with regard to the memes and jokes and funny videos, I mean, why does this community, not our community, this striped bass community at large, have to participate in such a nuanced and complex situation where half the time the decisions that happen aren't even reflective of the public's major goals, and they get beat down in the advocacy and education participation side of this fishery? The fishery in general is it's on a rebuilding plan because things are in such bad shape. We have 6 years of failed spawns. So you have 6 years of bad fishing that you know are coming in the future. You're not even experiencing them in a major way yet. It's only going to get worse and worse and worse, especially as they take up a bigger proportion of the spawning stock. So you have all this negativity around a fishery that was one of the biggest conservation stories in fisheries and has now just been tanked down to the bottom. Why do they just have to sit there with their hands crossed and not be able to smile and laugh or have a tiny bit of fun? They're not making inappropriate jokes or using fake names on Zoom calls. Everyone in the process is starting off their public comments by thank you so much for the great presentation. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to comment. Thank you. These are people that are playing by the rules, doing their best to educate themselves so they don't embarrass themselves in front of people who've been doing this for a lot longer than them. They're trying their hardest. And then you got one joke video, and apparently they've thrown off the integrity of decades of management and stability. Okay, how about the integrity of just legitimate, scientifically inaccurate lies? Does that not throw off the integrity of management? Is SpongeBob video killed integrity?
Hey, look, Cody, we could do, let me tell you something, brother. I'm glad you said it. Boy, did you tee me up. And I'll say it again. I've said it a million times. Let's break this down, what you just said. So Emily is very good at her job. She's the fisheries management plan coordinator for striped bass. Katie Drew is very good at her job. She's a stock assessment scientist for striped bass. Bob Beal, God love him. Bob Beal must be the most, I don't know what, like the guy, if you ever talk to him, he's a gentleman. He's a smart guy. He's even keeled, you know, and I don't know how he's kept this job for so long, not because he's not performing, but frankly, I'd run out of that place screaming if I had to be there for an hour at ASMFC. So like they actually have really good, capable people working for him. Okay. So I'm going to make a point here in a second. Imagine Cody, because me and Cody, we know, we talk. We've had some horrible jobs before this one. So imagine if people came in and you had 45 bosses and they were like, you need to do this, 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 and this, and this, and we're going to have an emergency meeting and you need to do all of this and you need to work around the clock and you need to get us all this stuff and you get it to them in time. I mean, look, I know some of these people have small children. When I mean small children, I mean like itty bitty, like 2 years old. Like they need their mom and dad. They need to have their diaper changed. The spouse needs to have a break. Like, so yeah, why don't you do a couple meetings at 7 o'clock at night when you should be feeding your kid and changing them, you know? Yeah. I mean, just crazy, you know, high expectation demands. And then they go to the meeting and they don't do anything. So you got a group of people who are capable and do a good job. And then they follow the rule of their 45 bosses. And then at the end, they're like, nah, we were just messing with you. We orchestrated all this ahead of time and we're not going to do shit. And then right after the holidays, we're going to put you on the hamster wheel again. Okay. So I've laid all that out with the employees. So everyone over at ASMFC, if you're still mad at us about the SpongeBob SquarePants video, we're not sorry, but appreciate the fact that we're singling you out and saying you're doing your job. So now back to SpongeBob SquarePants. The Striped Bass Management Board, the management board, not the employees. People hate you. They look at you. They have no faith in you whatsoever. You're destroying a multi-billion dollar fishery. You don't call people out when they're lying. Other commissioners. You let them manipulate the system. Robert rules you to death. The 18s are going to die. We have nothing coming down the pipe. And this is a multi-billion dollar fishery. So either you don't give a shit, or you don't speak up.
I mean, these board members encourage people. So, we need to get back out. We have to go the addendum route because public comments is an intricate part of this process and the voices must be heard. How is something back on the table that went 3,000 to 50?
3,000 to 50 and the voices need to be heard.
Is there 2,950 other people that would have balanced it out? That all live in a small town that just doesn't have Wi-Fi and doesn't know ASMFC exists.
So that's, you know, Cody, it's like a glass houses and stones thing, right? So we're educating people. We're, you know, pushing people to the next level of their understanding of fisheries management. And frankly, we've kind of created the most educated, you know, group of fishermen, I think, on the goddamn planet when it comes to the, you know, the science terms, how stock assessments are done, the acronyms. Like, it's like speaking a different language. When we bring new people into the fold at the Guides Association, what do we always tell them, Cody? It's going to take you about 6 months. It's going to take you about 6 months, a year, before you hear these things and you actually understand what they're talking about. It sounds like pig Latin when you're like, what is it? And you're like, and looking stuff up and pausing the video. People that have been
doing this for a long time feast off of. That's what they feast off of. They just mess
right
with the numbers and make basically just play a roundabout of every time they get on the mic in front of this. When I talk about people, I'm talking about board members, and they play a roundabout where it's a series of lies that can be disproven by data, but just jump to the next. And the annoying part, from you talk about people who participate in this and hating it. Why should they not, when they have to sit there for 6 hours straight? Most of the time, recently, they're not going to get a chance to comment on the mic. And someone can have the microphone, and it's a giant charade. It's an act. And they can lie and lie and lie and misdirect, and nothing happens. You know what was interesting? I'm going to tangent real quick. In Louisiana, what I enjoy about the public process is someone will go up to the stand. Today, gentlemen, I'd like to do this, 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 and this. The redfish, this, 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 and this. And they'd be like, hold on, scientist right there. Is that right? And the scientist would be like, no, he said that there's zero, but it's actually up 94%. And then they'd be like, well, you're wrong there. So you just lied. And you're kind of like, damn, you just got blasted on the spot. But then someone can take the mic and striped bass and be like, striped bass are up 500% because I said so. And they're like, thank you for the comment.
You know, Cody, let me tell you something. I've had this conversation more than once this week. People are like, you know, oh, Louisiana, oh, Louisiana. Louisiana is fixing to knock down a dam on the river that my uncle lived on, the Pearl River, because they got a weird little population of striped bass and they had a little bit of money left over in the budget. So they're going to do all sorts of work on stripers because the stripers swim up the Pearl River and they found them. They found them as far north as Natchez, Mississippi. So they got this weird little subpopulation of stripers and they're like, hey, let's learn about them. We got a little bit of extra money. Let's learn about these fish. What happened to them? Where'd they go? And they're, no, all the stripers did not move to Louisiana. So just God, please save me from that. There's a subpopulation. But my point is, these people are going to, Louisiana is more 10 times about more conservation than most states on the East Coast, whether it's them managing their ducks or their deer. Listen, you shoot a deer out of season in Louisiana, and they will weigh that thing and count the points on its head. And if it's a 2-point, if it's a spike, you only pay this much. If it's like a 14-point deer, you're going to have to put a second mortgage on your home to pay that fucking thing off. Whoops. To pay it the 1 hour, 12 minutes, if you want to get rid of that. You're going to have to spend, you have to put a second mortgage on your house to pay that deer off. So, like, don't tell me, you know, don't just paint Louisiana with a broad brush, because they're actually doing stuff. Actually, like Cody said, you go to those meetings, you talk a bunch of smack, they'll call you on it. It stops. And then guess what? The next meeting, they don't talk as much smack. They don't say things that aren't true. I'll give you an example. We're listening to the New York meeting, and a couple of the public comments said, why don't we start hatcheries? So Marty Gary's the new head of fisheries at New York DEC. And it just so happens that Marty Gary worked at one of the biggest, most efficient hatcheries in Maryland right around the time of the moratorium, when it was firing off fish left and right. Well, Marty got on the mic and said, the number one job of a hatchery is to close. That they're crazy expensive, and that they produced a gazillion fish. And when they did the DNA studies, Marty's exact words were, the hatchery fish were a pittance in the overall adult population. We cannot match Mother Nature. not even close. Doesn't matter how many of these things that you build, and they are crazy expensive and they do not produce results, to have more spawning fish in the system, and it turns the fishery into put and take striper fishery. Look, they stick in South Carolina. I don't want to misrepresent it, but it is a lot. It is over 10 million redfish that they put into the system every year. They're looking at, based on the stock assessment, they're looking at a 60% reduction on a 2 fish creel limit. So you know what that means? That means moratorium. You can't get around it. You can't, you go into one fish is like an 18% reduction. So tell me more about how awesome stocking is. That's one state carpet bombing little baby redfish. So you want to put and take fishery? Go for it. But Marty, actually, I want to commend him in that New York meeting, because he stood up and was like, I don't work. I know, because I worked in one for a long time, and we're really good at growing baby stripers. That's, and you know what? Whole room went silent. Wasn't brought up again. So thank you, Marty, for doing that. Sure hope it catches on with other commissioners. So where do we go from here? So they're going to be working up an addendum for this meeting in February. And guess what we're going to have to do? A bunch of commissioners reached out to me, talked about that quote that representative from the other organization said. They talked about the complete and utter failure of ASMFC to do anything. They talked about the employees at ASMFC being like, why'd we do all that work? And then they said their number one concern is people were going to throw up their hands and not participate anymore.
Which is, if you have publicly commented on Strike Bass up until this point, you're not allowed to on the next one. That is the rules.
Yeah.
That was sarcasm.
So what I told...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, total sarcasm. What I told the commissioners who were really concerned, and for good reason, what I told them was this, that I had to give the Winston Churchill speech to half the people, that we will fight in the streets and we will fight on the landing grounds and we will fight on the beaches and we will never surrender. And when you look at the big picture, folks, we have won more than we have lost on stripers. This document was just riddled with ways to get out and not do anything. And we kind of knew that going in. So we did the best we could with what we had on a really short timeline. And all I can say is we aren't going to change, not one little bit. That means that there are more SpongeBob SquarePants videos going. That means that there are going to be more podcasts. That means there are going to be more blogs. That means there's going to be more requests from brands and guides and y'all to sign our letter and to do something and demand something. It's more important now than ever. And I know you look at some 3,000 to 46 and they're still talking about it. And the only reason why they're talking about it, and the only reason why people support it, is because it's like working with an anvil over your head. Because this couple people are like, this is our threat. This is our big stick. And if you don't do an addendum and stall and delay so we can kill the 2018s, well, we're going to threaten you with no targeting and we're going to destroy what's left of the recreational economy. That's their big threat. So we got to fight against it. We got to fight against all of it.
This next public comment period is going to be like the town. All my Boston guys will know this reference. Tony, this next public comment period is going to be along the lines of, I need your help. Can't tell you what it is. You can never ask me about it later. And the only response we need to hear is, whose car are we taking?
I need your help. I can't tell you what it is. You can never ask me about it later. And we're going to hurt some people.
Whose car are we going to take?